we're watching the game, and then the nurse comes out and says the baby's head is showing, so we had to, you know, interrupt the game. So I actually missed like 7 or 8 minutes of the game to deliver her.
And I had to walk 30 minutes, but I made it in 15 because I kind of felt like if I got home sooner, I'd be able to erase this pregnancy. It wouldn't be true.
And as soon as I hit the grass and we started bumping along it, first he was screaming, and then the bike got lighter and I heard a scream, ah!
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hankin.
And I'm Laura Wexler. This week on the podcast, they don't come with a manual. Three stories about people navigating the adventures of parenthood.
Before we get started, we want to thank the Park School, which is a pre-K through grade 12 school located right outside of Baltimore. It's progressive, non-sectarian, and just awesome.
So this week on the podcast, these three stories are about parents sort of fumbling, flustering, trying to do the best they can, but really not always making the right decisions, shall we say. And so this first story is about a guy who, in the quest to get custody of his daughter, kind of behaves in a way you might not find likable, but his intentions are good. And so this is definitely a road to hell paved with good intentions story. Take a listen to Dave Wurzel.
So when Jessica first asked me to participate in this series, I looked at the list of topics coming up and I said, oh, love. I'll pick the one on love. I know all kinds of things about love. I started thinking about, you know, loves I've had, and then I started questioning, do I even know what love is? Have I ever really experienced love? And I guess being L, you start looking at those kinds of questions, you know? So I thought about my childhood and, you know, looked at my parents, their feelings for each other, and I thought, nah, that really wasn't love. That was more dependency. And what they showed my sisters and I was, well, wasn't love. It was some sick cousin of love that with many years of therapy might actually get to be bad love, you know. So, okay, we'll skip that whole thing and, you know, move forward. And, oh, well, I was married. And, well, was the operative word there. But then I thought about my daughter, Jamie, who was part of the whole marriage thing. I thought, well, there's someone I actually can say I do love and have done a lot of things for. And the very first sacrifice, I guess, I made, and all parents know about sacrifices, is I actually delivered Jamie. And I lived in Philadelphia at the time, grew up in Philadelphia, and while my wife was in the delivery room, the obstetrician and I were scrubbing, and the Flyers game was on. That's the hockey team. And we're watching the game, and then the nurse comes out and says the baby's head is showing, so we had to, you know, interrupt the game. So I actually missed like 7 or 8 minutes of the game to deliver her. So that was the sacrifice. So I knew right then this must be something, you know. Well, for various reasons, Jamie's mom and I didn't stay together. Had nothing to do with the Flyers. She actually liked them, too. Eagles was a different story. And so we broke up. And initially, we were supposed to do this nicely and, you know, share Jamie. And we were living near each other. And she was supposed to be with each of us half of the time. And that lasted, a week. And then things started getting ugly, and some folks know that occasionally children will be pawns through a divorce and separation. That's exactly what at least half of this relationship was trying to do here. And Jamie was not happy about it. She wanted me, or wanted to be with both of us at the time, but also didn't like not having access to me. And so after a few years of this, she had actually said, I want to come live with you. Well, being a single dad and a male trying to get custody of a daughter who at this time was probably 7 or 8 years old is not the easiest thing in the world. But I said, okay, if that's what you really want, I'll go ahead and do it. So we file papers and get lawyers and do all this. And that just began a whole new series of adventures, shall we say. The highlight of all those adventures, well, one of the highlights was spending 3 days in jail. Now you might ask, how would that happen? Well, so we're in court, and for the judge's wisdom, he decided for various reasons that Jamie should remain with her mother. This was after three of the kids that she had abandoned from a previous marriage had testified about that, And that she even had said that if I got custody of Jamie, she would just give it all up and never see Jamie again, because if she wasn't going to get support, there was really no reason to have an involvement. And the judge, in his infinite wisdom, decided, well, since Jamie should have access to both parents, then therefore she should stay with her mother, because then he knew I would always fight to see her. And at which point, I used to be much more fly off the handle when I was, you know, not L. And so the first thing I hear coming out of my mouth before my brain had a chance to stop it was, you fucking asshole. Friends, let me tell you, if you want to get on a judge's good side, if you're ever in court, do not say that, because you will be chained and shackled in various forms, like you just murdered 12 people and be hobbling out the door. I spent 3 days in jail and had a relatively good time, actually. Beat everybody my, you know, arm wrestling and everything, and you know, was drinking wine made out of orange drink, because somebody there worked in the bakery and was stealing the yeast, and so, you know, this was a great time. And what's also cool, if you go to call your friends from jail, there's a recording that says this is a collect call from a correctional institution, and they're all like, well, how'd you do that? That's really, you know. So I'm calling everybody I know, because it's not costing me anything, and and the other cool thing about it is, you know, there are people in there that were like, you know, mother rapers and father killers and were on the Group W bench. Those of you that are L understand that story. The younger ones may not. And they might be in there for whatever murder, rape, you know, car theft. But you tell them you call the judge a fucking asshole, you are just in a whole new category. You know, nobody messes with you. So after several days, the judge calls me back in and, you know, says, do you want to say anything to me? And I was smart enough to say, you're still, you know. And so I apologize. So this goes on, and eventually I fire all my attorneys, because I decided they're not that bright. I can go to the law library and learn about this. And you can be really annoying to just file about once a week, you know, things with the judge until he's going to get sick and tired of me. Well, he finally did on several fun stories. But in Pennsylvania, the law says when a child gets to be at least 10 years old, he or she can make up his or her own mind. And somewhere right after Jamie's 10th birthday, she was visiting me and came down with a letter to send to the judge, which we did. And, you know, there was still some wrangling, but I guess the Christmas of her 11th birthday is when she came to live with me. And up until, I guess, last year, when she now has an apartment around the corner from me with some friends, we did it. We, you know, had a partnership, you know, as much as a partnership with a adolescent female teenage daughter and, you know, a relatively bizarre father gets along. But I guess since I only have a minute or two, we probably just say we lived happily ever after.
I loved how when he talked about being in jail for those 3 days, that yelling at the judge was like considered like the most badass thing to have done. I thought that was so hilarious.
Yeah. Yes. You know, fun fact, he the way I met him was actually he led an intervention for a family member of mine, and it was pretty darn successful.
I feel like that, like he has a lot of the skills and like the street fighting.
Yeah. He's just got loads of credibility.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So before we get to our next parenthood story, we want to thank Golden West, which is a vegan-forward restaurant located on the Avenue in Hamden, which also has a late-night carryout window. And we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. They've been a great sponsor of The Stoop. You can find a copy on newsstands, visit baltimoremagazine.com, and you can check out their podcast, Local Flavor Live. So this next story is told by Rosalia Scalia. Mm. So if you can't get it, she's Italian.
We
love
her. She
talks real fast.
Yeah. She's got the best Baltimore Italian accent.
She is great. And this is a story about having some hopes for your kids and plans for your kids and it not working out like you thought or wanted it to. Take a listen.
The story I'm going to tell is the day I found out that my then 17-year-old daughter was pregnant. I got a call at work. I was working calmly. I got a call at work, and it was her boyfriend's mother telling me that she thought that Erin was pregnant. And I'm like, no. And sure enough, I felt like I had to go home and find out anyway. So I ran into my boss's office and told her I had an emergency and just ran out the door. And I had to walk 30 minutes, but I made it in 15 because I kind of felt like if I got home sooner, I'd be able to erase this pregnancy. It wouldn't be true. So I get there, and she's lying on the sofa, supine and sullen, and I'm like, get up, we have to get a pregnancy test. And of course, she didn't want to do that, so I threatened to kill her dead if she didn't get into the car. So we drive all over Baltimore City and went to every pregnancy clinic you wanted to think of, but none would take us because we didn't have an appointment. Who knew you needed an appointment for a pregnancy test? I should have known that after three pregnancies myself, but I forgot. So driving on a crossroad to get to another yet pregnancy, I see this huge sign, Crisis Pregnancy Center. That's the place for us. Park the car. We're both crying, but for different reasons. Go in. I don't look around. I don't see what's in. I just think she's got to get this test. She's got to get this test. So we go in, and a heavyset woman whisks Aaron in the back, and then I turn around, and then I see the waiting room, and then I see the biggest picture of Jesus I've ever seen in my life. And I knew I was doomed from that point on, and I just started wailing like Lucille Ball. Ah! So the lady behind the thing, you can tell she's a volunteer. She's like elderly. She's got cat eye glasses, and she's like, why are you crying? New life is joyful. And I'm like, she's going to go to college. I was so focused on this child going to college. That's all I could think about. And I'm wringing my hands. And then she said to me, she says, you know, it's got to be her decision either way. Because if you make her have an abortion, she's going to hate you. If you make her keep the baby, she's going to hate you. So either way, you're in a bad position. So Aaron comes out, and she's all smiling. She says, her baby's this big. And I'm thinking, in 3 days from now, you're going to be in a car going to South Carolina, whether your baby's this big or not. So she goes to South Carolina to school. I arrange for pregnancy care while she's down there. And she comes back in, you know, and has the baby in January, which would have been her second semester of her freshman year. And then while she's, like, having this baby and taking care of this baby, I'm looking around for colleges who will take women with children. And I find one in Chambersburg, PA. There's a program up there for single women with children, single women from 18 to 35 who want a college degree. Sign her up, get her in, do the financial aid, do the whole thing, get her up there. It's not marine biology, which is what she wanted, but they have animal husbandry. So that's the program she's in. She calls me up one day. She goes, Mom, I hate it here. I'm like, why? She goes, the teacher puts a picture of a cow on the wall, and she says, okay, who could tell me what this animal is? So I raise my hand, and I say, it's a cow, and everyone laughs at me. Why? Because I grew up in the city, and I don't know if it's a Holstein or from me. To me, it was a cow. So she comes back home, and when she comes back home, that's when the real problems begin, because her idea of parenting and my idea of parenting are different, and her idea of parenting is, I'm 19, and I still could go out and party. So, but one of the things that Aaron has taught me is that one does not necessarily need a college degree to be successful in life. She's going to be finishing an esthetician's program for Baltimore School of Massage, and now Angelo is 6 and in kindergarten, and everything worked out in the end.
I just love her. She's terrific. So Italian, so Baltimore. And I'm great grandmother to this child that she was not very happy to hear about in the beginning.
We want to thank Baltimore Center Stage, which is one of the podcast sponsors, for their support. And they have upcoming an amazing show called Where We Stand, a brand new fable of penance that's filled with humor, heart, and music. It's running April 2nd through April 26th. You can get tickets at centerstage.com.
So this last story on this week's episode is shared by a fellow named Ryan Patterson. He is an artist and an artist supporter, and he's got a great story about being a young dad.
So my story takes place the summer after I graduated from college at MICA. Most of my friends were moving away from Baltimore and going off to New York or LA to pursue some kind of art career, but I was really content to live right here. I had a big house of three other roommates, and about every other weekend we would either throw a huge party or turn a place into a concert venue. And then the rest of the week we would just kind of wade through the trash and empty Natty Bow cans that we left across the first floor. It was easy to find some simple work, and I picked up a few babysitting gigs. One was really simple. All I had to do was pick up a nice kid, take him to the pool for a swim lesson, and then I had the rest of the afternoon to myself. And it was about that time that I met this great woman named Rachel. Now, Rachel was my age, and she just graduated MICA, but she had a three-year-old son named Aiden. And Rachel and Aiden had just left Aiden's father, and they lived together in an apartment in Bolton Hill. And we started spending more time together, and Rachel asked if I might help take care of Aiden once in a while and maybe babysit. And after I spent a couple nights over there eating dinner or watching a movie with them, I realized it was a lot nicer to have a home-cooked meal in a house that didn't smell like the land of pleasant living when I wanted to lay down in it. So before really I took on babysitting, we started dating. But Rachel still needed help with Aiden. So I stepped up, even though I was 22 years old and had never taken care of anybody in my entire life. I was only child and had no siblings, and the only people I'd ever lived with were my college roommates. But I thought, okay, he'll do. I can do this. As long as he can hold his own slice of pizza and use the bathroom by himself most of the time, I'm going to be okay. So we started finding trouble around town. I remember one night I was going to try to make dinner for Rachel, and we went over to the grocery store, and Aiden really loved this like green plastic shopping cart that looked like a race car. And so we started running around the grocery store like Grand Theft Auto, careening around corners until we got to the frozen food section where I could spin him around. I had enough room to do donuts in the aisle, and he was leaning out the side almost throwing up with laughter and maybe whiplash. We found a kite and couldn't get a good breeze in the park, so I was like, let's just go up to the roof. That's a good spot. And we climbed the fire escape together until we got up there, flying the kite out over Save-A-Lot and over Bell Hardware and almost about a mile away to the senior home when a police helicopter came by so fast and loud it shook the house and almost cut the string of the kite. And so we scurried back down. And I remember as the year went on, Rachel took on her teaching residency for grad school. And so now I was almost there full time helping Aiden get ready for preschool. And he was late a lot, but we still had a lot of fun. And I remember carving a big pumpkin out for him around Halloween and just giving him a steak knife, like, go for it. Go ahead, carve. We still have a photo of him with this knife. So, he was also pretty nervous, and probably rightfully so. And there were nights that did not always settle right. And like any kid, and especially when he's gone through a lot of change, there was one night where he'd had night after night kind of a series of inconsolable nightmares. And he would come into the room, and I thought, maybe if we just showed him, like, there's nothing to be scared of in here. And so I wrapped him in a blanket and took him outside at night and was like, that park, there's pretty a lot of shadows over there. And there's somebody parked over there with no lights on. I don't know who's in that car. And those rats are running on broken glass, and they're a flickering light with sirens in the background. We got to get the heck back inside, buddy. And I'm wrapping him up and saying, look, this flashlight's for you, and this water's for you, and you have a warm blanket. And his eyes were like saucers. He wasn't crying, but I don't know if he slept at all that night. As time went on, we stuck it out, though. And 3 years later, Aiden's about 6 years old, and Rachel was actually pregnant with our second kid. We'd been married, and we were excited for our growing family. But I also wanted Aiden to know, he wasn't calling me dad. He still called me Ryan. But I wanted him to know that he could look at me like that, and that he was part of the family, and he could trust me. I got really excited that we were going to have this growing family, and I got this extra long cargo bike that I could fit both kids on the back of so we could ride around town and have more adventures together, and realized that Aiden was pretty nervous to ride on it. He was so scared I was going to like just bolt down a hill or do something crazy, and maybe he had a good reason, but I said, come on, it's going to be all right. And I went one lap around Druid Hill Park, and we were nice and calm, but then there was that great hill right between the tennis courts, and I was like, if he could just ride down that hill, he would know how fun it is to ride down a hill. So I started up, and as soon as I hit the grass and we started bumping along it, first he was screaming, and then the bike got lighter, and I heard it scream, ah! And I looked back. He was so scared, he actually jumped off the bike. He thought that would be safer than riding with me wherever the heck I was going. So it's up to that point, I start realizing that maybe he needs a little more
empathy and listening and some of the things. And that's after I had Banner, our second son, I realized that I'm holding this kid who cannot hold his own slice of pizza. And he needs a lot more help. And he can't just be my sidekick all the time. He needs somebody who's going to watch for him. And I definitely stepped up and tried to do better. And when it was time for Aiden for Banner, our second, to learn about music, I brought him to the sing-along co-op playgroup where I could learn from watching other parents. And instead of trying to sneak him into the back of the Dan Deacon concert at the Copycat building, or when it came time to ride bikes together, Banner was on the back and I rode safely, and Aiden could ride on his own next to us and on his own terms when he could go his own speed and kind of go where he wanted. And we learned traffic together and made sure both were safe. And I also learned a lot about watching how much Banner loved and watched Aiden and how patient Aiden was with him as a brother. And Banner just locked eyes on Aiden anytime he was around, when they were riding bikes next to each other, when they were drawing. And I can distinctly remember this one day where I was so proud of who they'd become, who Aiden was becoming, and he was drawing a picture, and Banner was just old enough to kind of sit up on his own, and his kind of baby talk was starting to form words. And he was sitting there watching Aiden draw, and Aiden said, "See, that's me." And Banner said, "Naden?" And then Aiden said, "That's Mom, and that's Ryan. He's our dad."
Love that story so much. He is so likable and fun and just a great guy. Rachel, like, she just got a gem when she found
but can you imagine, like, having a three-year-old, four-year-old, and having your new boyfriend, soon to be husband, being like, "Yeah, I'm just gonna treat him like my college roommate." Yeah. Like, we're gonna just do all these things. That it was,
he can
hilarious.
Hold his own pizza. That's
yes,
all that
I know. I know. That's, I feel like that's a real, like, it's a growth and development mark.
Yeah, a milestone.
Yeah, when the kid can eat their own, hold their own pizza. All right, before we get out of here this week, we want to thank The Wine Source, located at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. Visit them. They're great. And visit us at stoopstorytelling.com. You can leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
We want to thank Maureen Harvey, our wonderful producer, for taking such good care of us. Have a good week.
Bye-bye. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.